This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Corporate Service Supply and Manufacturing, a DJI Enterprise dealer providing DJI equipment and support for law enforcement, public safety, construction, and other commercial users of unmanned aerial systems. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/css. And by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/goengineer. You're listening to episode 264 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh, you lie.
I know. I just thought I'm not in Hartford, Connecticut. This is Max Flight calling from studio 427 in Annapolis, Maryland.
Airline pilot guy, will be so proud of you. And I'm David Vanderhoof at my new desk and my new podcasting setup, but in good old Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we this week?
Pretty good, pretty good. I tell you, David, though, it's a little strange being on a road trip without Drone Mama because, you know, we did everything together. So it just feels a lot different. Something doesn't feel right, but hey, we'll get used to it. I think we've got some interesting stories lined up for this episode.
We do. One, we talk about HoverMap, diving underground, autonomously map mines. We've got the persistent viral video of a persistent baby bear. North Carolina drone startup Precision Hawk makes fifth acquisition of 2018. We talked about consolidation last week and the week before and the week before that. Precision Hawk seems to be leading the pack with that. China enters the UCAV market. Diamonds are a drone's best friend, and that's the only reason why I put that article in, was so I could say that. And Robird, which flocks birds away from airports. So I guess with that, we should get started. What do you think, Max?
Let's get started, David.
Well, our first story comes from newatlas.com. HoverMap drones dive underground to autonomously map mines and tunnels. Australian-based startup MSAT is developing specialized software to autonomously map mines and tunnels. Sounds a bit rocky and treacherous.
This is HoverMap technology is what they call it. And it's this interesting mix of LiDAR, collision avoidance sensors, and GPS. And that payload is attached to a drone of the suitable type, they say, and they can use that to map underground environments like caves and tunnels and things like that. There's a video, actually there are a couple, but we'll put one in the show notes. There's a video that shows this, and this thing is really fascinating. This thing can fly, well, outside a line of sight, in through the cave tunnels and chambers, and it creates this fascinating 3D map. This is just really amazing stuff.
It's mining gold. Okay, I'll quit with the mine jokes. It is really nice, neat technology. And of course, it's definitely beyond line of sight, so you have to, but it's fascinating watching it avoid the obstacles. Now, flying in caves aren't necessarily easy to do. And we've seen, when I was up in Toronto 2 years ago, they had drones that were built in cages so they could bounce off walls, etc. This is really kind of fine-tuning that. And think about the implications. Say you have a bunch of soccer students trapped in a mine because they decided to go for a hike. This would be a good way to get supplies to them or to map the cave so they could get the rescue teams to them.
And just to be clear, I mean, these maps are incredibly detailed. You can see the, you know, individual rocks and pebbles, and it's just an amazing amount of amount of detail. Now, this company, Emisant, I guess, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but maybe that's close. But this comes from former researchers at the Australian Federal Government Research Agency, the CSIRO. They worked in the robotics.
CSIRO,
that's right. They worked in the Robotics and Autonomous Systems Group. Like I say, the video is really, really kind of impressive. And this is more than just a concept. They have actually tested this in Western Australia, down like 2,000 feet, it says, according to this article. And they said it was the world's first fully autonomous, beyond visual line of sight drone flight in an underground mine. I imagine, David, this technology that they're using also would have applications like in buildings, maybe in natural disasters, where there are earthquakes or something of that sort. Anywhere where you have an environment that's not safe for people, or at least not without scouting ahead, and then using this technology to go in there and, you know, map whatever the situation is. This just has so many really positive implications, applications. I think this is it's very exciting, very exciting.
Agreed. In an urban environment, just think about, you could actually say that, say, New York City is a tunnel. And so it interesting stuff. So we'll keep track of that. Thanks to all of our Australian listeners, as a shout out to them. You guys are always giving us leads like this so that we can follow up and keep you guys abreast of what's going on down under. The next one, the problem behind a viral video of a persistent baby bear.
Mm.
And this is from theatlantic.com.
Did you see the video on the news, David? That's where I saw it.
I did not catch the video on the news. I only caught it when my co-host put it in the show notes. But that being said, it's really interesting.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, there's a mother bear and a cub who are climbing up a mountain, a snow covered, something like that. And the mother bear is making it up. And this is a really steep climb. She's doing okay. The cub keeps slipping and sliding backwards, and then tries it again, and then slides backward again, and finally makes it up to the top where he's reunited with his mother and everybody feels good. It's one of those sort of warming types of videos. Well, according to this article, some biologists have looked at this, and they say that the scenario played out here is something completely different. Completely different.
Yeah, it was that large buzzing thing that they were trying to get away from. The one that was actually filming them trying to get away from it. They basically, all of the professionals in the animal world have said, this was a disruptive behavior because of the drone, and the bears wouldn't normally do this, except they were fleeing from what they thought was a real threat. Mother bears tend to, if they think they can, they'll protect, stand their ground and protect their babies. It takes a lot for them to get up and move and run away from them. So,
yeah, there was even a scene in this video, which I did not see this part on the television, on the news, where apparently the mother bear kind of like strikes the cub, knocking it back down the hill. And the animal experts say that this is a natural kind of behavior. If the mother feels that there is a threat, she's trying to, in effect, push her cub away from, from the threat to try to protect it. So, yeah, if what the experts say is happening here is true, then it's an example of, using a drone to get a great shot, some nice video, but terrorizing wildlife, which is not what we want to be doing. No word yet on rebuttal as to if this is really what's been going on here with this video. But I guess, David, sometimes things are just not exactly what they seem to be.
Yeah, we might need to get to the bare facts on this one.
I knew that was coming. You've become fairly predictable.
You don't think that joke was unbearable?
No, okay.
I can do them all day long, and you know it.
No, you have to go crawl in a cave.
I'll send in the drones. North Carolina drone startup Precision Hawk makes fifth acquisition of 2018 with Uplift Data Partners. And this was from VentureBeat.com. Congratulations, Precision Hawk. Boy, they are consolidating their assets. They are reaching out and they are making a complete package deal, I guess, picking these little pieces up and then rolling them into their universe.
Yeah, the company Uplift Data Partners, they provide drone-based inspection services, as do many companies, but this is focusing on the construction and facilities management industry. They're fairly new. It looks like they were launched in 2015 as a subsidiary of Clayco, which is a big construction company in Chicago. They didn't disclose any details of the deal. But yeah, again, Precision Hawk has been on this path. They acquired Hazon and Inspect Tools in September, Droners and AirVid in February. And all this after they had received the $75 million in a funding round last January. So Precision Hawk is definitely building out a capability that is able to offer sort of one-stop shopping, I guess, for a variety of different services.
You know what struck me as interesting about, okay, not necessarily Precision Hawk's acquisition of this product, but we were talking about sometimes you do things that you sort of regret a moment afterwards, like a construction company deciding to do into drones, and maybe after a couple of years you realize that this really isn't your forte and you probably should sell it off to somebody else. You know, I was sort of looking at it like, yeah, Precision Hawk is picking up something, but it was also like the company that Clayco was actually getting involved with something that maybe was a bit out, biting out too much out of their league. So there are multiple ways to look at this consolidation that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, where some people got into it because it looked lucrative and then they realized, well, maybe I really shouldn't be taking this route. So interesting the way to look at it. But we do like Precision Hawk. They do seem to be the service provider that's equivalent to our favorite company, DJI. They seem to be becoming the behemoth in the room, but that's good.
Yeah, and they say that they're going to continue to expand even more, focusing in on high growth industries. So what are the high growth industries? Well, energy and renewables, agriculture, of course, construction, of course, infrastructure, as well as insurance and government. So I think we may see some more acquisitions on the part of Precision Hawk in the future.
So our next story comes from Newsweek. This was the military geek getting involved here. And it's China unveils new stealth drone with eye on Middle East dictators. Kind of a interesting headline, I thought. But okay, this is when I defer to my co-host. But the Zhuhai air show, correct?
Zhuhai.
Well, this week is the Zhuhai air show, which is a big international air show in China, primarily to show off all of those Chinese markets, all of their Chinese aircraft and things. And they displayed the CH-7 UAV, which looks an awful lot like an X-47B by Boeing.
Doesn't it?
It's a flying wing. I used to grow up hearing that aerodynamics in Russia is the same as aerodynamics in the United States. That's why airplanes look the same. Right.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of...
there was a tongue is firmly in cheek there. But what's interesting about this headline was China seems to be wanting to not market this for them, but they want to market it to overseas.
Right.
And it's not just a reconnaissance drone. It's an armed drone. Now, up to right now, the two leading manufacturers of armed drones in the world happen to be Israel and the United States. We have gone out of our way to restrain sales of armed UAVs to multiple countries, you know, as sort of a way of tamping down expansion. But here's China going, well, if the United States and Israel won't sell you their Predators and Reapers and Herons, how about we sell you one and we'll undersell them to begin with. So unfortunately, this is a lesson in things are going to get complicated very quickly as the UAV aircraft, militarized UAV aircraft, spread throughout the country. And every good dictator and soldier wants the latest in technology. So countries like in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia and Oman and the United Arab Emirates are always looking for the latest technology and are willing to pay for it. And if the United States aren't willing to sell it, well, maybe China will.
Yeah. A couple of thoughts from me on this. One is that even if the Chinese unmanned aircraft technology isn't up to the same levels as what can be found in the United States and, say, Israel, it doesn't matter. Because if the United States won't sell drone technology, then almost as good from China is better than nothing from the United States in the eyes of some of these governments. The other thing is that, you know, it kind of raises this dilemma, almost a ethical or moral dilemma. I mean, some might argue, and I'm not saying this is what I believe, but some might argue that, well, if we don't sell them this kind of equipment, then the Chinese are, and that just helps advance their role in the world and helps advance their technology development and all. So why shouldn't we just sell them ourselves? Well, again, I'm not advocating that position, but it is something to discuss, I think, because if the Chinese are out there selling this kind of hardware, how do we respond? So it's not clear to me. I mean, personally, I don't think the answer should be then, well, if countries are going to buy this kind of equipment from China anyway, we might as well sell it to them ourselves. I don't advocate that either personally, but I don't know what the real answer is.
I don't really think there is one other than the United States comes up with even better software and technology for anti-drone systems, but it's one of those. It's a very interesting thing that I hate to use third world nations, developing nations, sometimes the first thing they want over technology like health is they want military technology, you know, and Max and I are both old enough to have lived through the Cold War and the height of the Cold War and client states and stuff. And now, as we're in the 21st century, we're starting a new sort of Cold War with China and Russia and all of those client states. And they want their own client states. And they are willing to sell the equipment that they think will make them A, money, and B, give them a leg up when it comes to allies, etc. So tough thoughts, but... we shouldn't be surprised that China is looking to market their equipment now to the rest of the world.
Yeah, and maybe they'll end up dominating large drones the way they do small drones. I don't know. Well, boy, we got really political and deep on that story, didn't we, David?
Sorry, my fault, but diamonds are a drone's best friend?
Yeah.
This is from commercialdroneprofessional.com. Lab-grown diamonds offer solution to drone flight time issue. Now, diamonds being my birthstone and your, well, no, not your birthstone.
No.
Not quite, but I like diamonds. But lab-grown diamonds is really a interesting technology, and how they fit into drones was even more interesting.
First, when I read this headline, I'm thinking, wow, what's the intersection of diamonds and drone flight time issues? So what we have here is Lake Diamond, and they are creating these little small square diamonds, lab-grown diamonds. And what they're doing is they're using them as the optical component of a laser. And the idea is you shine the laser at the drone, which has photovoltaic cells on the surface, maybe, as a way to recharge it while the drone's in flight. Now, normally with that kind of an approach, you know, you think of high-powered lasers, you know, the burning anything in their path and so forth. But this doesn't work that way at all. The laser is actually fairly low-powered, but it uses a frequency that, or a wavelength that doesn't damage human skin or eyes. So it offers the prospect of being able to charge drones or recharge drones at a distance using lasers. It's pretty fascinating.
You know, we like to think that pressure brought this to bear. But, okay, so much for my diamond humor.
Yeah, it took me a few seconds to catch on to that one.
we could charcoal that one away.
Yeah, okay, that one is obvious.
But no, I actually thought it was one of those technologies that we, you know, I've always been fascinated with artificially created diamonds, that their triple Ks are even better than if they were mined out of the ground. But in this case, it's an interesting technology and beneficial. And we had talked about using lasers to charge drones before, but it almost sounds like it's getting practical that we can do that.
Yeah.
I wonder how well it would work in a cave that you're doing 3D mapping about.
Yeah, only line of sight. You know, back to that article, though, you know, when I think of caves, I'm thinking of some pretty serious rock structures and all. I wonder how far that drone can get away from the operators. Well, I guess the thing is autonomous. I guess that's why it doesn't matter. That's why they need to be autonomous, I guess. So you don't need a communication link back to a human controller. All right. I guess I answered my own question.
You sure?
I'll say yes.
Okay. We could reach out to our friends in Australia if you actually know the Cicero team. Could you find out for us? We'd appreciate it.
Great.
Well, our last story, I'm sure our audience will flock to. I mean, it's quite the bird, or Roebird for that matter. And this is from UASmagazine.com. A peregrine falcon-shaped drone is being used to clear away birds from airports, which is probably the biggest threat to airports. I don't think most people realize, but flocks of birds are dangerous. Ask Sully Sullivan.
That's where you get bird strikes. It is a big problem. Yeah, oftentimes airports are in or create environments that are attractive to many species of birds, and so you get a lot of them there. And there have been a lot of things tried to manage, well, not only birds, but wildlife in general at airports. Drones have been used in the past. We've talked about some of the applications of those.
One of our very first applications was chasing Canada geese off of the beaches in Toronto, off of Lake Ontario. I still remember that story. That was like our second or third episode.
Yes, yes. Sometimes dogs have been used to chase birds away. Just a variety of different things. So what we have here is, yeah, this drone that is not only shaped like a peregrine falcon, but it also flies like a peregrine falcon. so that bird, which is a predator, so other bird species are, you know, intimidated by that and flee. So you have here Arium, these companies, Arium Analytics, Clear Flight Solutions, along with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, working with Grand Forks, North Dakota. They've been trying these robirds, R-O-B-I-R-D, robirds, that mimic peregrine falcons. And it seems like they're getting some success.
They are. The Arium Analytics is in Alberta, Canada, and the Clear Solutions is in the Netherlands. So you've got multiple countries coming through and then proceeding to integrate over North Dakota, which we, of course, know is an FAA test center. But I thought it was, what was really cool about this was, why did they pick a peregrine falcon? And evidently, peregrine falcons are on six continents, which pretty much covers where you have airports with bird issues. I don't think McMurdo's stations with their penguins is really an issue. I think they'll figure that out on their own. But
yeah, the penguins are probably okay.
But I actually did think it was interesting that they picked a bird that was able to be used on multiple continents. The other part about it was it's geofenced, so it doesn't enter the airport for per se. So they're thinking about drone strikes as well as bird strikes.
Right, sure. And also they're operating under a COA, Certificate of Authorization from the FAA that lets them fly in that area. But we'll have some links in the show notes to these companies, a little description of the Robird. It does use flapping wing flight for propulsion. They say that the flight performance of the drone is comparable to the real birds, and that this presents an interesting way to affect bird control around airports, but maybe in some other areas as well. Sometimes they're a problem at golf courses and things like that. So they have the Robird, which is the falcon, but they I think they also have an eagle version of this that might be unattractive to or a threat to other bird species or other animal species that the peregrine falcon is not.
I know my father would have wished he had a roe deer to get all the deer off of the airport at the base. You know, there is equally bad as, you should see what a deer does to a C-130 if you can imagine what it does to what a bird strike does. Things are progressing. We see a lot of things. What's old is new again, but definitely take a look at the show notes for this because it really looks like a peregrine falcon, down to the colors, it's painted, etc. So very cool, good technology, and I think maybe we should use the Robird to chase us off the end of this episode, Max.
There you go. We want to thank you for listening. We really appreciate it, and you can find us at the UAV Digest. .com. There you'll find show notes for all the episodes with links to the stories and as well as the companies that we talk about and some other information. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, well, that's it. The UAVDigest.com/264.
And please do check out our web pages because we have lots of conferences, etc., and you might be able to get involved with a drone organization in your area near you. So also, if you're really interested in becoming part of our network, you can become part of our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And you can join our conversations on all sorts of things, including, if you're really interested, you could see Max Flight's recording studio for this evening, which is definitely an incentive to join our Slack listener team. Likewise, we are on Facebook, of course, at UAV Digest, and on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can purchase some swag for us at our Cafe Press store. And it's been a while, and we would really appreciate that you leave some feedback on whatever podcatcher you use, either Stitcher, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. That way, we keep our rankings up high and other people can find us so we can continue to bring you the content that you've come to like. And so with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Annapolis.
Thank you for listening.